We are 1,523 days into 14 days to flatten the curve. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Johnny Anderson alongside Melissa from Cutting Through the Matrix. Melissa, how are you?
I'm well, Johnny. Thank you.
It is good to see you. It's been a couple of weeks. How are things overall? Good? Bad?
Well, overall, things are improving. I've had a rough month with a lot of challenges, and I am recuperating from how hard I had to work to get over a few hurdles, and that's it. I can even say that I've dedicated myself to a little bit of email catch-up lately, so.
Well, that's good.
It's looking good, yep.
That's good. I'm glad to hear it.
How are you?
I'm good. You know, it's just usual riff and raff and everything, day-to-day stuff. You know, I'm fine. Speaking of electronic mail, let's talk about electric cars, shall we? Yeah?
You
like electric cars, yeah? The Biden administration has spent $7.5 billion in a new scheme to put chargers up everywhere, you know, the electric, you know, to do the things that are championed by the Department of Transportation to have all these charging stations everywhere. After $7.5 billion that we've spent already on that infrastructure, do you want to take a guess as to how many charging stations are actually up right now and operational?
Okay, $7.5 billion.
Yes, across the entire country. This was to set up
the entire country.
Okay. Yes, $7.5 billion for EV charging stations. That's it.
Okay, I'll probably go way too low, but I'm going to go with 2,372 charging stations. That's probably way too low.
Okay, that's an interesting number you picked there, but okay. I'm going to tell you, though, that you are too high.
Can I go again?
Yeah, you get a second one. Yeah, I'll let the first one slide. Yeah, you're way too high.
Okay. Am I under 1,000 then?
Well, I can't.
This is across the whole country.
This is across the entire country, yes.
Okay. 1,814.
I'm going to correct you again. Seven. We have put up seven charging stations across the entire country for $7.5 billion.
So we've got more than a billion apiece.
Yes, we've got a whopping seven that are up now. Yes, if that's not a sign.
Do I get a consolation prize like a coffee mug?
Yes, you get an electric car with no charger. Is what you get. Yeah. That is what you get.
No, I don't want to.
Yeah. I don't even want to get into that. But I did see this week that he put sanctions, and I don't expect anything to come of it, but they put sanctions on the Chinese, I think. It's something about the CHIPS Act, and they're sanctioning companies that do the batteries for the EVs. And China's actually got a monopoly on, well, more or less a monopoly on making those things, as in like the battery cells for them. So if we're all supposed to own nothing and be happy about it, if we're supposed to follow that mantra, we're not going to have any gasoline powered cars because all this legislative stuff they're pushing through is to phase all that stuff out. But it looks like we're not going to have any electric cars either.
Well, this was the plan. Whatever we call it, Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, Agenda for the 21st Century, the Sustainable Development Goals, the idea was no private vehicles. Essential vehicles only. Essential vehicles means, of course, the limos that drive the bureaucrats around. Absolutely. But it means whatever they deem to be essential. But we and our means of transportation are not essential. That's got to go.
I remember when I was at the Frankfurt Auto Show. It's one of the big, it's like the Detroit Auto Show kind of thing, but it's for over here, kind of like the one in Geneva. And I was there I used to go every year, and then everything started to change. I want to say about 7 or 8 years ago, everything was changing to electric. And I thought, well, what is all this junk? You know, they were all concepts back then. Nobody had even really seen any kind of marketing or advertising or anything like that. And it was all the future is now, the future is autonomous, and the future is electric car and everything else. And all the big manufacturers started to do it. But the last auto show that I went to, they were really pushing this across the board. So Porsche had one, Volkswagen had one, Mercedes, you know, all the German manufacturers, the US, they were all there. The Chinese cars and the Chinese manufacturers, they were there, the Japanese, everybody had an electric car to show off, you know, just the main concept that they were going to be going towards. But one thing that was interesting, you can sit in a lot of these cars. So a lot of the ones that are there, you can sit in them and you can just kind of get the feel for them. You can mess around with the stuff that's in them, that kind of stuff. But every single manufacturer had like a VIP section, if you know what I mean. So they would bring them in and they would get special escorts and special passes and everything. And they would have all the special access to all the different vehicles and they could test drive them and that kind of stuff. What was interesting was they were all shown different cars. So kind of speaking to your point here, the ones that are going to be going around in like the limousines and things, they were all shown different models. No one else was allowed to see those or get anywhere near them, the VIPs. They were shown different cars. They were and none of those were electric, nothing. Those were all your standard like gasoline and diesel and, you know, cars and trucks and everything else and SUVs and what else. But it was like nothing was going to change for them. And I could see that. I could see that when they would walk past everybody else that were around all these electric cars and they would just kind of sneer at them and keep on going and they would be overlooking at their models and none of that would change.
Yeah.
So there it is. And that was many years ago. And I can I can only assume it's the same way now. When I saw all of that electric autonomous stuff, I said, "What in the world is this?" And I said, "I'm never coming back again." And I never went back.
No, this has been the plan, and it will be. I mean, those of us who are paying attention will see some things that look rather obvious, but to the public, as this gets floated out, it'll come at you from a lot of different angles. So it's going to be the price of gasoline. There's going to be some kind of climate emergency. There'll be the pushing of the 15-minute cities. There'll be a lot of different reasons why this is pushed. But the end result is that people will not end up with private means of transportation. Already in big cities, you're seeing things like bicycle sharing or EV sharing or autonomous car sharing. You know, that's a big city trend all over.
Yeah, they have that now. They what's it called? Like car to go is one of them where you can just it's a smartphone thing where you can just scan the thing and it unlocks the car. And you jump into it and you drive it somewhere and you just leave it kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And of course, Uber, Lyft, and I don't know if there's another one now. It's called like Bolt or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they have these, they do the bicycles, but they also have these, I don't know if they're in American cities. I think they are in some American cities. They have these little scooters that you can rent now. I imagine
they're in Portland, don't you think?
Probably. Well, maybe. Yeah. I doubt very much. Yeah, they've probably broken a lot of the locks on those things, you know, because nobody wants to pay for them. But you can just jump on one of these things. You scan a little QR code thing, and I think it charges you like a few cents per 100 meters or whatever it is that you go on it. And you just zip around the city on it, and then you just drop it wherever you want, and then it bills you kind of thing. It just debits your account. But you mentioned a climate emergency. Did we talk about that the last time you were on, that Biden is looking at COVID-like powers for a climate emergency? Have you seen that?
I have seen that. Yes. I don't know if we talked about it last time. But.
All right. Well, I'm going to run the report from, much as I hate to say it, Fox News. You know, I don't like it, but this is what it was.
Telling Fox Business, it's now considering declaring a national climate emergency. But that's a climate crisis to you, Mark. The AP, which sets the standards for newsrooms across the country, they're urging Americans to use the term climate crisis to address the current situation. This is all troubling, but if the president declares a climate emergency, what impact does that have?
Well, I mean, this is the serious story of the today. NBC News has reported that if Joe Biden declares a national climate emergency, he would have COVID-like powers under that emergency. And they also compared the emergency powers to the 9/11 emergency powers. The Center for Biological Diversity has estimated Joe Biden would get about 130 wartime-like powers by which to bypass democracy and impose the Green New Deal on America without a single vote of Congress. This is truly this is a Halloween story, not a story for Earth Day. This is a truly frightening story, and he might just be desperate enough to do it. This is being widely reported in the media. The Biden White House is leaking this out. This might happen, and this is going to give Joe Biden these kind of, you want to say the word, dictatorial powers. He doesn't need no stinking democracy to impose the Green New Deal if he does this.
Climate emergency.
Yeah, they keep saying COVID-like powers or COVID powers, COVID-like powers. I wonder if part of the costume is like a skull cap with, you know, spiky COVID virus.
Could be. Yeah,
that's part of his COVID superpowers.
Could be. in the shape of a hurricane or something. Yeah. I don't know. And maybe we can kind of wrap this one into it, but I definitely foresee, and we were kind of discussing this back and forth in soundcheck. I definitely foresee some type of a something coming to where there's going to be massive disruption somewhere to cause problems, as in just like it was with COVID, there's going to be something that happens, as in like, how do I put this? So we talked about the Palestinian protests that are going on college campuses. And I said that, to me, and it's just my guess, it's just pure speculation, I feel like they are just priming the pump for something. Like they're just getting everybody ready. They're getting all their hands on deck. You know, Soros and company are getting all their foot soldiers ready, for lack of a better term, to be ready to go. And they're just waiting on something. And if they can't get anything, like another George Floyd, just as an example, I'm not saying that directly, but if they can't get something like that, then maybe they can pull something like this, what we just heard, just something to cause civil unrest by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Just my guess.
Well, I think that it's a good guess, because I believe that what we'll live through over the next few years is a series of crises, and this, they may occur at the same time. But, you know, I was listening this morning to an old talk that Alan did on somebody's show. I think it was back in 2007. And the host he was just insistent that Alan come up with solutions and, you know, a positive way of looking at what's going on. And Alan said, look, there's no point in trying to be positive about this. It's like, you know, the train is coming down the tracks. It's barreling down on you. Are you going to turn around and pretend that it's not there, that it's not coming down on you? He also talked about so much of what is regularly discussed in the so-called alternate world now, which is the brain chip, the fact that we will not be sentient individuals any longer. And that's really racing down on us at a clip. One of the things that we were talking about in the preparation for this conversation was AI and job redundancy. And the fact that what's going to happen when AI and robotics are taking over your jobs, there will be so few people left who are needed to manage these new kinds of technologies. And as Alan always pointed out, they're not going to keep us around as pets. This is what he returned to time and time again. And it's bleak. It can be depressing, but it is that we're looking at an ancient agenda of families who work intergenerationally. And if you want to say at the core of their worldview or what drives them, it's eugenics, it's depopulation. And this we see in a variety of ways. So we're living through skyrocketing cancer rates. We know what happened in the last 4 years. We know that fallout and bad results we haven't even begun to be able to qualify what exactly is happening, because we're at a loss here. We're at a disadvantage. We don't really have good information. So all we can have is our best guesses when we don't even know what we're looking at.
Where do I start with that? Do I go with AI? Do I go with Neuralink? Because I have the thing on Elon Musk. We'll talk about that in a second, I guess. Artificial intelligence, I suppose. Let's start there. I was having a conversation with somebody last week. I'm not going to say who or what, what they do. But they were telling me almost the same thing I'm hearing from other people. They're saying within around the same time period, they're saying within 3 to 4 years, they're going to be, as in their positions, will be redundant. And my question to that person was not quite the way that Harari puts it, as in like, what are we going to do with all the useless people? But my question was more along the lines of, what are we going to do with people? What do they think is going to happen? Because people are going to become very unhappy. Now, the average person that has a job that's, I don't even want to say that they enjoy their job, because if you look at the statistics and the way that they do a lot of these polls and surveys, most people are unhappy in their jobs. They hate them. They can't stand them. So that begs the question, what does someone become when they don't have that job any longer and it's no longer available? What do you do? Because people at the same time, even though they're unhappy with their jobs, they are defined by what they do. So most of the time, as in if you're in an actual profession or something, that is what you know. For example, a chemist, right? I know several chemists. That's what they do. That is what they know. Their life is molecules. That's what they know. They don't know anything else. And people that are big into, like, we call them code monkeys, you know, the ones that do all the coding and everything for like software and stuff like that. That is what they know. They don't know much of anything else. I'm not saying everyone's like that, but I'm saying the ones that are heavily into this, that is what they do. That is what they know. And that's how they see everything else in their life. So what do you do when all of that goes away? Does this foster the pathway for bringing in of something? And we'll segue to Musk here in a second. But what he talked about and what is pushed everywhere else is a universal basic income. And I posed that question to that person when we were having this discussion. And I said, with a kind of half-cocked smile on my face, I said, but you know good and well that's going to come with stipulations. And they just smiled and said, yeah. So it's, yeah, what do you do?
Well, I tell you what, this is going to be a kind of a depressing thought here. But as Alan said in this talk that I was listening to, unless you understand the history and the agenda, how long this has been planned and where it's going, there is nothing that you could actually do about it. In other words, there's no use trying to be positive or look at the positive or look at solutions until you have allowed yourself to fully comprehend what is happening. So when I talk about eugenics, well, that might sound like breeding and superior and inferior types. But when I talk about depopulation, that is a word that you can't really dance around. Depopulation means getting rid of excess population. And I think, and again, that this is may possibly informed speculation, but I don't have anything other than my own thoughts that tells me that the whole idea of universal basic income is a MacGuffin. Do you know what a MacGuffin is?
Educate it's me, some, please. I've not heard something, that word before.
It's something in a script or a story, a movie or a novel that seems so important. It might even look like it's the whole entire plot, but it has nothing to do with anything. It's the MacGuffin, the thing that's just put there to distract you, perhaps, or put you off the scent of what's really happening. And I think that universal basic income is part of a MacGuffin. These people who have intergenerationally planned and implemented our destruction, because they think that the world should be their playground. Very few of the right kind of people left to play here with some mindless, brain-chipped, robotic, possibly still humanoid, possibly not, left to do their bidding. They don't need us. So they're not going to give us Pornhub and live streaming sex acts.
You mean OnlyFans is going away? Oh, goodness. Goodness. What is society going to do without these hardworking people? Sorry.
That's not going to be part of the plan. They're not going to. If universal basic income is actually implemented, it will be some kind of smoke and mirrors thing. It'll be very short term, or they'll tell us that it's being implemented and maybe in some areas we'll see it. But depopulation means depopulation. You know, the fact that the Georgia Guidestones got demolished doesn't mean we don't know who put them up there or, you know, but was this an elaborate psyop? I don't know.
Well, I got to be honest with you. As somebody with an investigative background, I have to ask a simple question. Why was there not an investigation into who blew them up, let alone who put them there?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's all very theatrical, but...
Well, it's like Ukraine is theatrical. Like Blinken's over there today. You know, Anthony, I run the Biden Center with Chinese Communist Party money at University of Pennsylvania or whatever, Delaware, wherever it was. And he's over there in Ukraine. He's in Kiev today eating pizza. This is ridiculous. Like, this is a comic show.
Johnny, you've got to stop saying Kiev.
Arkiv, that's I'm so, sorry. I know.
2008.
Yes, I know. Okay. All right. Fine. Moving over to Elon Musk
It's not Qatar. It's Qatar.
It's Qatar. Yeah, that's right. That's what Obama said, right? It's Qatar. Yeah. Let's go to Elon Musk and this concept of, you know, and robotics. I truly believe robotics. If you apply the AI algorithms to robotics, have you seen some of these Boston Dynamic robots that they've got, the new upgrades? They're doing like backflips and all kinds of stuff. Yeah. That's crazy stuff. And they're doing it off of like scaffolding and things. Mm-hmm. But anyway. The first patient that Musk has had for his Neuralink brain chip, there's been a bit of a problem, just a small one, you know, just a little one. It's a 29-year-old quadriplegic patient, and the device that they implanted, it's had some complications, just a few. It did fail, and they say in weeks following the surgery, this is an actual quote from the company Neuralink, they say in the weeks following the surgery, a number of threads, you know, because they've got the little things that go down and stick into your brain, you know, that because that sounds comforting, doesn't it? Yeah, after they cut a chunk out of your skull to put those things in it. Yeah. A number of threads retracted from the brain, resulting in a net decrease in the number of effective electrodes. So you've got some wires kind of just jumbled around, floating around in there. I'm sure that feels nice, doesn't it? I bet it does. I don't know. And then that begs the question, if we go down this road, you don't just put one of these, you don't shoehorn one of these things in there. You know, that's a pretty good way of putting it. And then you don't leave it there, do you? If an upgrade comes along, if you want the Mark IIs or the Mark IIIs or the Mark Xs or whatever, you're going to have another chunk of your head cut out and have that thing removed and have another one put in there, right?
Yes.
This is pretty graphic stuff, but I mean, this is what they're doing.
See, I don't want to be one of these people that I don't believe that the system and anything in it is for our benefit. But I've never wanted to be one of those people that go, oh, that's fake or that's made up or this is, you know, an elaborate psyop or theater. I say that plenty. But in the case of Neuralink, I am, for my own satisfaction, completely convinced that this is making a mockery of us. They have been working with this technology, the brain implantable neural interface, brain computer interface, BCIs, whatever that, you know, the brain computer interface for so long that the idea that Neuralink is in any way cutting edge is a joke. It's a giant joke on us. I feel sorry for the gentleman who was the first human test subject who has had this occur. That is sad. But this is not real. This is not a real endeavor that Musk is undertaking here. This is just a tragic piece of theater because they're way down the road with what they can do with BCIs. We can take that to the bank, you know, and try to deposit it with our digital currency. It's a fact.
Your digital currency will be on that brain chip. Yeah, you got to have that in order to get it. That's what it'll eventually become. No mistake about it. That's what it'll be.
Sure. But I think, see, I'm going to just go back to the depopulation for a moment, because let's say that we're looking at an octopus. What do they call those things that come off an octopus? Are tentacles. Those tentacles? Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so we're looking at tentacles. Let's look at the head of the octopus, okay? Because I think that the head of the octopus is an ancient, I don't know is the word, family, lineage, dynasty. These people, and we can point to who some of them are, we'll never know it all, but they have been for a long time. It's clear if you start to study it and you work your way backwards, they are eugenicists. They do want us depopulated. So we can look at electric vehicles and digital currency and brain computer interfaces. And these are tentacles of an octopus that does not want anything but to be rid of us. And our lifespans are so short, Johnny. I mean, this is a They're so short. It's all over almost in the blink of an eye. And so you've got to really be always trying to get the bird's eye view here. I'm not lecturing you. I hope I don't sound like I am, but you got to the bird's eye view.
Please lecture. That's fine. Yeah.
You know, because otherwise you get stuck in minutiae. You get stuck in the tentacles. And it's important to say, then, okay, that's depressing. That's a really ugly thought. These people want to kill me. They want to kill you. They want to kill us. Well, if you can start to understand why, and then if you've got excellent communication skills, I don't say that lightly. You speak well, you think quickly, you can put things together. So that means that you're going to be somebody. The more that you accumulate this knowledge and the more it becomes part of the wisdom that you get from your life's experience, the more potential there is that you could be a threat, because if you don't lose sight of the big picture, they mean to harm us. They want to kill us. And you start going after why do they want to do that? And I think that the solution, if there is one, is that we have to be firmly grounded in our own individuality and an unshakable attachment, if you will, to our own brain power, you know, our own ability to think things through and come to our own conclusions. People who can communicate well and understand what's going on, we are threatening.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I tell people all the time, because I'm very I keep to myself most of the time. I'm not like an introvert or asocial or something like that. I'm definitely not that type. I think you would have picked up on that by now. But I have learned that it is just not worth the conflict with most people most of the time any longer. As much as we do, as in like research and working on our own self-development and stuff, I don't have time to sit there and argue with somebody over something stupid. Like what we were talking about in soundcheck, when you try and tell people the facts about something, we were talking about a criminal case, mm-hmm. and people just don't hear it. I don't have time to sit there and argue with them anymore. I don't have time for that. So I just don't even bother with it. But I tell people that, and I firmly, and I know this for a fact, I have more attention on me now than I've ever had, and I don't like it. I do not like it at all.
Are you going to stop doing what you're
doing? No, absolutely not.
Well, see, that's the price. That's the price that we pay, is we get attention and attacks and bothers hassles.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, even Marty said, you know, one of our English contributors, he said that if we're not getting at least 3 death threats a week, we're not doing a good enough job. So we have to strive for at least that, you know. But the online speech bill, that's, and I make no mistake, I think they're going to go after they're going to shut down communications first. And when I say shut down communications, if you're in a war against somebody, and let's be honest, that's what this is, if you didn't mm-hmm. know already, mm-hmm. if you're in a war against someone, then you're going to want to shut down their communications first.
Yes.
That's the first thing you do. So my guess is that they're going to go after comms, and they're not going to go after the small fish in the pond like us first. They're going to go after the big ones first so they can get them out of the way. And then we're just easy to pick off after that. So that's where I see things, is it's going to be these draconian hate speech things that they're putting through. I told you about how Canada's now changed theirs again, and it's going to be retroactive now. So now it's blanket anything you've ever said online, anything. Mm-hmm. Going mm-hmm. back 15, 20 years, doesn't matter. If you said something on a post or an email somewhere that's still archived from 2006, they can now get you for it in Canada if it goes through. I don't think it's passed yet, but it's now, they've changed the wording of it to where it's worse now than what it was before. And they're coming for everybody. And that's not a joke. And those that don't do what we do, the ones that are sitting out there listening to us, if we're the targets, what do you think they're going to do to you? So they're going to get rid of us so they have carte blanche to come after you after that.
See, this is, this is one reason why it is so important not to flinch at the ugly and the evil and the hideous and the terrifying, but to be able to look at it and say, yes, okay, I see that is what is going on here, because I believe this to be true, that depopulation is the goal. That means not 50 years down the line, because if you study what they wrote, we're in a whole new, completely different world by 2050. Things drastically change by 2030. They've published enough of their 5 and 10 and 25 year plans for us to know this. we can see, we've discussed how drastically the world has changed from late 2019 until today, almost midway through 2024. My assessment is we're in a completely different world, and it will be this radically different in 2030. And it'll change again. And they do not want people speaking about what is happening, because as long as there's somebody that is out there saying, this is what the plans are, this is how they've progressed with them, this is where they want to take us, then people have an opportunity, if only for themselves, to make some changes and do things differently in their lives. And that was another component of what Alan was saying in this talk that I was listening to, is how difficult what you do is, and what we do is. And I know that you know this, because we do it, what we do, it's like a compulsion. And we understand that very few people who listen to us will take us seriously. I mean, they listen to us and they go, great information, just like people listen to Alan and go, great information. But people will go, well, yeah, but it can't really be that bad, because, you know, and there will be a reason to soften the blow of the information that you're receiving. And one thing that Alan said is that very few people have already prepared themselves intellectually and in their psyche and their moral fiber, if you will, to be able to receive the information. But that's who we're going for. Yep. Those are the people that we're going for, not the bulk of the population who don't want to hear, who can't hear, who, you know, keep going, oh, yeah, but tell me something good. You know, let's look at the positive now. And, you know, because it's really bleak. And if you can accept that, then you might be a, you know, well, let's just keep going with war analogy, but you might make a decent foot soldier if you understand what's at risk. If you don't, then God help you.
Because no one else will. Certainly not yourself. To your point there about people saying, oh, well, it can't be that bad. No, you're right. You know what I tell them? No, you're right. It's actually worse than that. I'm sugarcoating it for you.
Yes. Yes. So, but what I didn't, I interrupted myself as I often do, but what Alan was saying is that he had spent years teaching people in very small groups and one-on-one. And he told me that, you know, definitely he had a decided preference for one-on-one teaching, because only when you're sitting down face-to-face with somebody, you can see their eyes, you can watch their body language, you can understand what they're taking in and what they are rejecting or defending against hearing. Do you know how far you can push the conversation, what you can give them? Because, you know, I mean, I hope that amongst the people who are listening, they can hear depopulation without just shutting down. But if we were saying this to an audience of 20,000 people, well, you know that 18 or 19,000 people would just shut down immediately at that information.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. As to how evil all of this has gotten, shall we go over to the Eurovision Song Contest?
Oh, yes, let's.
Because this I'm not going to play it. Yeah, I'm not going to play it. We played a small snippet of it earlier, later last week, and yes, it was so awful that I had to, like, the screeching and everything else that was going on there. I don't even know what that was. I had to turn it off after like 10 seconds because I said, okay, that's enough.
Yes.
And we were talking about it. This was Ireland's contestant, whatever I believe this is a trans witch, I think is what this is. But did you catch this one?
Yes. Have you seen this? Oh, okay. Absolutely.
Okay. So I don't know what any of that is what's going on.
I don't know that it is trans. It may just be a sad female.
Oh, no, 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 no. They were wearing the holding the flag up and wearing the pink and the blue and all of that.
Oh, that could just be solidarity, Johnny.
It could be. Yeah, it could be. Yeah. It could be one of those standing.
But let's not quibble over details. Whatever it is OK. Oh, my goodness.
I'm just saying, you know, there it is. So, yeah.
Okay, so
when I first saw this, I have to say, when I first saw this, I actually thought I was watching the White House Correspondents' Dinner at first, but then I saw it was I saw it was Eurovision Song Contest.
Okay, so that people can see what we're looking at, this creature is holding up the trans flag over her body. She almost looks naked, but she's got some camouflage here and there, or it. I don't know what I'm looking at. I thought it was a female, but it could be a full-blown trans. But, and there's people in the audience wearing horns. This creature has some kind of horn-like thing on its head. And I watched its entire video and actually featured it in the Real History I put up last week. So, yeah.
Yeah, and you called the winner. That was non-binary named Nemo.
Nemo. Yeah.
From Switzerland, and it was that. Yeah. So
what had happened was Neil was giving me the heads up on the UK entrant to this competition. Eurovision is a song competition that's been around since 1956. ABBA's big hit from the 70s, Waterloo, was introduced there. So, you know, this is Eurovision.
Yeah.
And for American audiences who have stayed focused on more of the hits and things that come out of America, they may not be as aware of this, but that's what it is. So he was bringing to my attention that the freak named Ollie Alexander, who was prancing around singing in a brassiere, a woman's brassiere. So he sent me a little 30-second clip and was talking about the upcoming Eurovision. So I had not had much time to read all of the news clips that he'd sent me over the last month. And so I thought, well, instead of doing that, I'm going to spend this hour before we talk watching each and every music video of the finalists of this Eurovision competition. And that's what I did.
You have my respect for being able to stomach that.
It was educational. It was really crazy. And then as Neil and I were talking, I said, well, you have to admit, Neil, that the non-binary song, that entrant, is it's a catchy little tune. And Neil wasn't having it. He just said, ah, rubbish, I can't, you know. So I said to myself later, well, I called it because that was the winner of the competition. So, you know, kind of scary. It is kind of scary. It was a catchy tune. But what I took away from it wasn't so much, you know, talentless versus talent that came up when I was talking with Neil. But you see, I said these are songwriters and these are their compositions. Well, that's not exactly true. The whole music industry is a very important part of the agenda. And musicians and who we think of as stars, they are run by panel, by committee, if you will. People who sit around and say, that's a catchy little tune we've got here that Nemo may or may not have written, but somebody wrote it for this they, them, because those are the pronouns that Nemo uses. So they, them needs a hit about being non-binary, and a committee, I posit this, delivers to they, them this hit. And that is what makes something like Eurovision or any of popular culture worth looking at. It's certainly not to ingest without extreme caution, but it's simply to see what is it that is being pushed on the culture and why.
This pronoun stuff, I suppose we can talk about culture the last 15 minutes here or so, because that's what this is. It's being pushed that way. Mm-hmm. I don't see a way back from this pronoun nonsense. There is not a way back.
I
don't see a reversal in any way. Mm-mm. I mean,
there's not.
If you look at the way that it's pushed on, and I don't even want to say the university level. I mean, I think that goes without saying, but down to the elementary schools now, I'm going to tell you something here that was told to me by a school administrator. I'm not going to say where or what specifically that they do, but their five-year-old was sent home a permission slip to discuss things like this and a kindergartner. Discuss things like this and sexual abuse in the classroom. These kinds of conversations should not be happening.
No.
This should not be going on. I mean, that is not my child, and that enrages me. This kind of thing, not that long ago, when I was in school, this would not have been tolerated. My parents would not have stood for that.
No.
So I don't see a way, apart from a major, major culture shift, as in like parents getting involved. But at the same time, you've got the other end of this, where you've got the DOJ and the FBI classifying parents that go to school board meetings and complain about this as domestic terrorists.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Well, you see, in Canada, it's already illegal. A parent cannot stop their child or even have a conversation in the privacy of their own home to suggest to the child that maybe they want to take a beat and reconsider this. Now, speaking of Canada, I have to tell you something. This is another one that I first got the heads up from Neil Foster on this gentleman named John, J-O-N, Euler. And he has one of his websites, and part of the work that he does is called Unmasking the Trans Movement. And he's put out a lot of good interviews. He is a counselor. And I was watching some of his, I want to do a real history with him. And I was watching a couple of things that he put out yesterday. And he was talking to someone in Canada, and I can't remember the gentleman's name, and I haven't been able to find much on a background, but a Canadian gentleman who has made it his study to catalog all of the books that are part of the LGBTQ movement that are available in school libraries across Canada. And I've only begun to look at some of what he's done, but he goes book by book, and then he tells you in this part of, you know, province by province, in this part of British Columbia, in this school district, these are the following books that are available. And I have to tell you, Johnny, I see a lot of filth every single week.
Oh, yeah.
In what I do, say I'm illustrating a video and I'm looking for something about pop culture or about transgender or about whatever, I see a lot of filth. And what John Mueller and his guest from Canada were looking at when they were showing examples of children's books that are available in school libraries in Canada shocked me and sickened me to the core. Mm. I've never seen anything like this. This is graphic, pornographic sex, some of which is aimed at children as young as 5 and 6, where they are shown naked bodies, graphic descriptions of sexual acts between a small boy and an older man. This is so vile, and it's all over Canada. I wonder if it's all over the U.S. I haven't seen somebody do this kind of work in the U.S.
I've seen similar reports, parents from these actual parents that go and they hold these books up at these school board meetings, and the school board people, they just sit there behind their stupid masks or whatever it is that they're still doing behind their plastic dividers, and they'll just say, "Okay, your time is up." And they won't even respond to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll just move on, you know, and make sure the police drag the person away from the microphone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've seen that. And I've actually seen that in the U.S., in Canada. I've seen that in U.S. where parents show up and they're concerned and the police are there to haul them off.
Oh, yeah.
So
they should be hauling the school board people off.
They should be. You know, there is an element of mental illness at play here. And that is one thing that Nemo, they, them, said that they dealt with issues of gender identity and mental illness. So you can talk about mental illness when you're talking about an adult that says, okay, that birth sex thing. No, that's not me. I'm something different. I'm non-binary. You can talk about mental illness maybe when you're dealing with a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old. But when you have these books in the schools and these school boards that are this vile and evil and the teachers who are promoting this, you cannot call a 4-year-old, as they have in Scotland. They're recruiting 4-year-olds in kindergarten to be part of the LGBTQ, some kind of team that supports and praises and is, you know, part of a support network in the schools for this. You can't call a 4-year-old mentally ill. You have to call a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old a victim of sexual abuse. That's what's going on.
I think, again, my opinion, if we go back to some of the clips we've played here before of Mr. Bezmenov, the ones that I've sent you, I look at this as the new communism. They've subverted all of our education systems.
They've
ideologically subverted everything. Yep. And this is what it is. Rather than being taught stone cold Marxism, they're being taught this.
Yes. Yes,
and if you look at it in terms from that perspective, this is more effective than a fleet of atomic bombers coming over to level your country.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. And I don't see like that generation that's coming up that's being twisted up in all of this. There's no future for that. None. So we're talking about an AI algorithm taking over everybody's jobs and everybody's professions. But that's getting rid of the people that are already in the system. The ones that are coming up that are brainwashed with all this other stuff, they don't have a future anyway.
No.
So there's nothing you can do in a profession like that. There's no DEI hiring practice for that kind of crazy. Like that's not possible. Mm-mm. So
terrible.
It is terrible. Do you have any final things that you would like to cover before you get away for the next 2 weeks?
Yes. Repent. The end is nigh.
Where's the positivity? I want to see positivity. Tell me something good.
it's bleak. It is bleak. I mean, okay, I'll go back to this talk. I think I'm going to put it up Sunday for the Redux. So if anybody's curious what talk of Alan's I keep referencing, this is the one I'll put up on Sunday. But he talks about what is left to come, you know, how do people deal with this kind of horror? And the host, you know, wants a positive spin on it, wants solutions. And Alan's, here's the RX, here's your prescription. You have to see just how horrible it is. You've got to be educated on the history of it and why. And only then do you get the prescription. And the prescription is your own peace of mind, because you understand what's happening and why. And that peace of mind, Johnny, that lets me laugh from time to time in the face of just what a horror show we live through. And, you know, laughter's the best medicine.
It is. I told people years ago on this podcast, I said, this is back, it was right around the time of COVID. Even when there were lockdowns and everything going on and people were out of their jobs or whatever, and they didn't know what to do, our numbers actually increased because people were looking for things to listen to as to what was going on. At that time, I said, you still have time, as in you still have time to get to this point you're talking about, to condition your mind, to learn about what's actually going on. You have time to do that now. There will come a certain point where you will not have any more time. And that time, even now, you still have a very, very small window, but you still have it to at least get a basic understanding, maybe not a deep understanding at this point, because things are going to accelerate so fast from here on out that you're not going to be able to keep with it.
If you're
not mentally prepared for what is coming, the shock of it alone will cause you to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So
that is right. That's right, because the prescription really is, hang on to your own sanity. Allow yourself to really understand, to comprehend fully how evil, there's not a better word than evil, just how diabolical this all is. If you can absorb that and survive it and not flinch, don't turn away, don't try to look at the bright side, or, you know, don't look for the silver lining. There isn't one. So what you get, though, is you get peace of mind, and you get I think you understand this. It's very satisfying to understand what's happening and why. And the deeper that your understanding of what is happening grows, what I have discovered for myself is that hand in hand with that is a sense of peace of mind.
Absolutely. People do ask me from time to time, they're like, how can you talk about this with a smile on your face? And I'm like, because I don't want to say I'm desensitized to it, but I can understand and I can navigate it. I can see what's happening. So I'm not shocked. Like, everything that's happening right now, I'm not shocked by that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mm-hmm. The things we were talking about with the culture, that kind of caught me out of left field. You know, the pronoun thing, I wouldn't have guessed that maybe 10, 15 years ago. Probably not.
No.
that everything else, I'm not shocked by that at all. Anything that's going on financially, anything that's going on with this move to the 15-minute cities, the 2050 stuff, I'm not shocked by any of that. That doesn't faze me at all. But the thing that caught me out of left field was the pronoun thing and this trans stuff. I thought that's insane. I wasn't ready for that.
I think I've told you this before, and if I have, I'm sorry to your audience as well. But when I first started listening to Alan, I saw what he had in the book department for offer, and I thought, I was so put off by the title of his second volume that I thought, well, I'll just get these, actually the first volume, I thought I'll get these one at a time and I'll start with volume two and then I'll get volume three. And then I'll, if I am interested, I'll go back to volume one, because I did not understand the title of the androgynous hermaphroditic agenda. That
say
I was
that
just
three
going,
times fast. Huh? Yeah. Huh?
So that was me all those years ago. And it's kind of laughable now to think that I couldn't wrap my head around an androgynous hermaphroditic agenda. So, yeah, I'm with you. The culture thing, even when I was questioning 9/11 after 9/11 and, you know, this whole trans insanity, that was a hard one for me to wrap my head around, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, would you like to talk about what you've got going on, what your latest podcast is about, and what the next one is you got coming up, what you're working on, and all of that stuff?
Well, I don't know if I'm not sure that I'll have a real history this week, because I can't seem to connect with the person that I thought I was going to do it with. If I do something solo or not, it just depends. If last minute I'm inspired, there may be a real history this week, or there might not be. And we're 3 episodes into a new listener supplied video series of excerpts called The Authors. And the one that just went up yesterday is George Orwell. So that's a good one. And that's about all I'll promote. I've talked all about the Redux that's going up on Sunday, and I'm not sure that I'll have anything to add in front of that. It may just be Alan and the host talking, because I think it's self-explanatory. Although I may just say at the very beginning, just listen to the way Alan handles this throughout the whole talk. Okay. He's not having positivity. I'll have none of that. Thank you very much.
I don't think that's been the theme of today's broadcast either, has it? It hasn't been positivity. Now, give me something positive to look for, will you?
Okay, let's have some solutions. I already told you, repent.
That's the best thing you can do at this point, I think. So, you know what? And don't be so serious. Even if you do get to a point where you start to get the basics of things, and, you know, you said laughter is the best medicine. The most serious guy, when you're in a war, and like I said, that's what this is. Make no mistake about that. When you're in a war and you're in a foxhole, you know, the holes they dig in the ground that the soldiers hide in. You know, of course, you know what that is. The guy that's the most serious, he's usually the first one that gets capped. So have a sense of humor.
Yeah. They also call it gallows humor.
Yeah.
You know, it's ugly. It's dark. Your life is on the line. It's a life and death battle here. There's no doubt about that. But humor it's an important piece of equipment to have in your arsenal. I think perhaps the most important.
It is.
Right up there.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I will see you in 2 weeks. Yes.
Yes, you will.
Very good. That is Melissa from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com. I encourage all of our listeners to get over there and take a look at the treasure trove of information they have, where she maintains the life collected works of the late, great Alan Watt. And her podcast is Real History with Melissa. That is available everywhere you get your podcasts. It has been an absolute pleasure, Melissa. I will see you in 2 weeks. Thank you for being here today. Thank you to all of the listeners. God bless everyone and have a great evening.